Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. It all starts right here, right now, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
And a pleasant good morning and welcome in to Inside the Clubhouse for Saturday, November 24th. I'm David Schuster filling in for Matt Spiegel. He, of course, is Bruce Levine. Bruce, I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. And it may be dreary outside again weather-wise today, but I guarantee everybody out there listening, we have a hot baseball show this morning.
And the hot stove is always lit here at Inside the Clubhouse, David. And the number, of course, is 312-644-6767. Text David at 670-11. He'll read all that is worthy from baseball talk to put on the air. By the way, David, holiday season, greetings from Max and Benny's in Northbrook, your top restaurant, bakery, and deli in Chicagoland. They remind you that catering in the restaurant party rooms are available now for all of your holiday special events or business meetings. As for John at maxandbennys.com, party rooms are available for 10 to 150 people for all your special events. Soup season is here. Freshest and heartiest soups warm the body and make your day at Max and Benny's. Combine that with build your own salad to start your day and end your evening at Max and Benny's. Dinners from 4 to 9, 7 days a week. The best deli in America. Bakery goods to die for. 30 minutes from downtown, 30 minutes from the Wisconsin border. Max and Benny's in Northbrook. What a way to start or end your day. And starting your day here on The Score, David, baseball talk continues. The hot stove is lit, and we're not going to ever hear the end of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, your Chicago teams, and 28 others. On our show today, we'll always be talking to you. Ken Rosenthal from Fox Sports and The Athletic will be joining us at 9:30 to fill in some expertise like no other. Ken is at the very top of his game when it comes to information in the game. Larry Young, umpire supervisor, will tell us about where we're at as far as electronic umpires. Will we ever have them, David, behind home plate? He'll talk to us about time of game and other issues going on in baseball. We're here for you until 10:45 today, normally 9 to 11. The Paul pregame starts at 10:45 on The Score.
And this hour brought to you by Webb Chevy. Searching for a great deal on Chevys in Chicago? Visit Webb Chevy in Plainfield or Oak Lawn. Bruce, what I love about the show for so many reasons is there's people lining up to talk to you specifically even before we get on the air. So I think they wait all week to talk to you about baseball, right? And we're going to get to them in just a moment. But first, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the Cubs. I mean, they're looking for a pitching coach. I don't know if this is unprecedented, but to look for a pitching coach, a week or two before the winter meetings, of which you'll be out in Las Vegas, by the way, and you can talk about that in just a little bit as well. But to look for a pitching coach at this late date going into a season is unusual, to say the least, and I know you have some candidates that they're looking at.
Well, you're right. We still have a team in Baltimore that doesn't have a manager. So they're late. They just hired their general manager last week. This is late, but, again, I'm going to have to apologize to the Cubs front office for even questioning about the Jim Hickey situation over the last 6 weeks or so and not understanding exactly how the matter was. Jim Hickey resigned from the Cubs this week and said it was totally upon him, something that occurred within the realm of him and his life, and it became an HR issue, and he resigned. They came up with a happy ending to say goodbye, and Jim is going somewhere else. So the speculation that was out there, David, about how, well, this is one more nail in the coffin of Joe Maddon and they're just chopping another leg out, was totally unfounded. And, you know, at one point I speculated. I never wrote about it. I think on this show I talked about it once, how that if it was the situation, it was one more thing against Joe. So, again, not having the proper knowledge, that was my bad. And I'm sure there's other people out there that feel the same way because when we talked to Theo Epstein about it and other people with the Cubs, they said we're not allowed to talk. Other people advised us that, you know, it was an internal situation and that Hickey was trying to figure it out. And finally, we come with this conclusion. But what's next? Who is the next pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs? Here's what I've been able to find out. Brian Price, a former Cincinnati Reds manager and pitching coach for 15 years in baseball, and John Farrell, who was a pitching coach for the 2007 World Champion Red Sox and their manager when they won in 2013, are both getting interviews from the Cubs. So will Tommy Hatavi. Tommy Hatavi is a coordinator of advanced scouting for the Chicago Cubs. Tommy is considered one of the most one of the brightest guys in the organization. He's in charge, David Daly, of preparing scouting reports and preparing defenses and getting the pitcher and the catcher ready for games, along with Mike Borzello, who's the catching coordinator. And his input on free agents and on pitchers around the league for the front office as far as who they go after in the offseason is invaluable. He's a really bright guy, former pitcher, pitched in the minor leagues and with the Cubs until 2014 for a couple of years. And he has risen to a very high level in the organization to the point where he's being considered for this job. So those three guys, Lester Strode, who is their bullpen coach, will also be considered. There's a couple of other names out there. Rick Kranitz, who used to coach here and just got fired by Philadelphia. Juan Nieves, who was the bullpen coach for the White Sox and pitching coach for the Red Sox. And just recently, Miami's also a name. But I think the guy who you look for is Hatavi, and also looking at Price and looking at
Farrell
at this point. So those are the three guys that you're going to be looking at, and it's going to be an important hire. I mean, it always is. This will be three pitching coaches in 3 years for the Cubs, David.
And same for hitting.
Same for hitting coach. Theo Epstein, this is not on him. He would have had him back. I think they were generally happy with his performance last year.
Yeah, the numbers by the Cubs pitchers overall, I mean, you can nitpick and find some fault here and there, obviously, but the numbers for the Cubs pitching staff, you know, including the bullpen, were pretty good overall. And it certainly wasn't Jim Hickey's or Joe Maddon's or anybody's fault other than, I'll just put it on the two pitchers themselves, Yu Darvish with some of the injuries, you know, and obviously Tyler Chatwood, who still can't find home plate. So you can't blame Jim Hickey for that. So that's really interesting.
You might. I mean, you might say, well, he never got through to Darvish because before he got hurt on May 20th and was shelved for the rest of the season, he was not pitching well. I mean, he had 8 starts. He had 3 good ones. They were all against Milwaukee. I don't think they were thrilled about that, but that's such a sample size of what it's all about. Chatwood just became a total mess. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a disaster. And whether or not they wanted to blame Hickey for that or whether they wanted to blame Carl Edwards for him not being the pitcher that he was, that would probably be nitpicking because of the fact that, as you mentioned, the ERA was up there in the top of the league. The pitching, the bullpen was the strength of the team all year long, even after lost Morrow.
Right.
He never pitched after the All-Star game, and they still managed to fortify the team and help them win.
So many questions about the Cubs. You know, what are they going to do now in the offseason? Again, we mentioned that you're going to be out there at the winter meetings. It starts, what, 2 weeks from tomorrow?
2 weeks
out
from
in
tomorrow,
Las Vegas.
December 9th through the 13th. It ends with the Rule 5 draft on a Thursday morning.
So there's a lot to talk about with the Cubs. Are they finally, in my estimation, finally going to make a trade with the surplus of what I think they have? And that means Ian Happ or Kyle Schwarber, one of them going. I don't see the Cubs actually signing either Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, but we'll talk about that as well. So if they want to pick up some other parts that they need, I think they have to go the trade route, you know, going into that. Do they look for a closer? Are they, you know, confident that Brandon Morrow will come back healthy and pitch a whole season? Or do they look free agency in this advent for somebody like Zach Britton? So a lot of questions regarding the Cubs.
Believe it or not, starting last year, they had two all-star defensive infielders covering the game. And they, you know, they had Russell at short, Baez at second. A ball couldn't get through. The Cubs were last in defensive shifting in the National League. And one of the reasons for that was the vast range that they had up the middle. You combine that with Rizzo, who won another gold glove at first base, and Bryant, who was always average, not maybe not the best, but certainly not horrible at third base. You had you know, a team that didn't have to shift and didn't have to worry about somebody hitting the ball the opposite way because he had so much range. Now with the up-in-the-air status of Russell, who they're trying to rehab off the field and get his game back together, there's great questions with Ben Zobrist going into his last year with the team at age 38. How many games can he play at second? If Russell's not part of the mix, I think that from what I understand, the Cubs are after a middle infielder. And that is a priority for him, and probably through trade rather than through free agency. And what do they have to trade? Well, just as you mentioned, is Ian Happ the trade bait for a solid middle infielder, somebody that can be under contract control and give them you know, somebody that can hit in the upper part of the order? We brought up Merrifield of Kansas City as somebody that they might be looking at. There's five or six other teams they've talked to already about that.
All right, Bruce, your fan base awaits, and they want to ask you some questions, so let's go out to the phone lines. Again, our number, 312-644-6767. Let's start here in the city, River North and Matt. Go ahead, Matt. You're on Inside the Clubhouse.
Hey, fellas. Bruce, I had a question for you. What would it take for the Cubs to get Edwin Diaz if Seattle is truly blowing it up? And would the Seattle say, hey, look, we're going to stick you with Robinson Cano's contract if you want to make this deal?
Matt, I don't see that happening. I think they're going to hold on to Diaz because they want to win. When I talked to Jerry DePoto, their general manager at the general manager's meetings, he said the story that we're blowing it up totally is false. We are moving some of our veteran guys if we can. We're not blowing out our entire team because we'd like to do something like the Yankees did, where they did a minor rebuild for a year, kind of, you know, was around a 500 team and then stepped on the gas again. That's kind of what DePoto does. And DePoto trades more than any general manager in baseball. If he doesn't make a trade every 2 weeks, he's not a happy guy. So I don't think Diaz is going anywhere. But, Matt, it's a good suggestion.
Well, then they would have to look for guys, you know, relievers in the free agent market. I mean, would you be opposed to them going after Kimbrel or Kelly on Boston, or, you know, just, I mean, you know, you're getting a few guys like that?
I mean, Kelly's a good name. I think Kimbrel, and Matt, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Matt.
David, Kelly's a good name. He's not going to be a 3 or 4 year guy. Kimbrel is going to be looked for a Wade Davis type deal. 3 years, $51 million that he signed last year. Are Kimbrough's better days behind him? Is it buyer beware with a fastball pitcher that's been around 10 years and has had also a lot of postseason work that has worn him down? I think you have to be a little wary of signing a guy like that.
And something to remember, and you and I talked about this before the show even started, Theo Epstein does not usually like going out and spending too much money. I mean, he spent some money, obviously, on Brandon Morrow last year.
Yeah,
long-term contracts for closers.
Right, and it was a two-year deal, and Morrow wasn't necessarily signed as a closer because at that point, Davis hadn't signed anywhere else. Mm-hmm. There was still a possibility of moving in another closer. But in reality, that is exactly right, what you brought up, David. Even going back to his Boston years, Epstein never laid a lot of money on long-term closers. Now, he had you know, in-house candidates that stayed there for a while. But, you know, in reality, he's never paid a lot of money for a long-term closer. And I'm not sure if he's going to do that this year. I think he did say they're going to add to the bullpen. That means you might bring in another power arm and let Joe figure out the end of the game or who's going to close on a more regular basis. But at this point, you can't trust Morrow because of his injury-prone career, last year of a contract, having an elbow problem at the end, it's just not anything that you can trust being there all year long.
Yeah, how many times did we stand in front of his locker and hear that, you know, I'm feeling better, I should be back within the next week. We must have heard that a half a dozen times. And then in the long run, he wasn't able to come back at all. So, yeah, you cannot rely on him in the short or long run of being healthy because his career states that he just won't be.
White Sox fans, where is Avisail Garcia going? Is he going to be back with you at 27? Is he a part of the rebuild? Or at $8 million, his arbitration figure for this year, is that too costly for a guy and for a team that has outfield prospects and guys like Eloy Jimenez on the come?
All right, let's go back out to the phone lines. Let's go out to Braidwood and John. And John's talking about a topic that I always talk about with you, Bruce. Go ahead, John. You're on Inside the Clubhouse.
Morning, guys. And, yeah, David, I'm glad that you're on here because I want to vent a little bit of frustration that we've been talking about the past 2 years, and I haven't heard much attention to it, is the top of the lineup with the Cubs is a problem. It's been a problem the past 2 years. And, David, I know that you've always been lukewarm on Albert Almora, and I agree with you. He's an average ball player, very good center fielder, but he's not a leadoff hitter. Mm-hmm. Neither is Ian Happ, and I'm really getting tired of seeing this Ian Happ, Albert Almora rotating circus in center field. They've got to pay attention to fixing the top of that lineup because Albert Almora's average the past 2 years has dropped at the end of the year. Also, Ian Happ, I don't know what direction he's going into, but I'd like to see them package both of them up in a trade, get a center fielder that Joe can ink in every day that can lead off. Because I was listening to your show last week, Bruce, and you were right. People are all over Joe Maddon about switching these guys around, and you said, very good, what else is he going to do? He doesn't have the players to put in like when he had Dexter Fowler, he could ink him in every day as a leadoff hitter. It's still a problem. I'm not hearing enough attention to it, so I was wondering what you guys thought about it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John.
Well, Merrifield would answer that question. I mean, if they could develop a package, and again, Kansas City is light years away from competing. They're behind the White Sox as far as what they project because the White Sox have better young talent in the organization now. Kansas City is still at the beginning, basically, of a rebuild, David, and Merrifield's going to be 30 years old this year. He's a very good player, good on-base percentage, stole 49 bases. That's the type of player that would solve some problems for you for a couple of years and fortify the middle of the infield where you don't know what's going to happen with Russell, where you know Zobrist at age 38 is you're going to have to watch the games that he plays to get the very most out of him. And he was terrific last year. I can't mention Zobrist without saying that I think he got ripped off of the Comeback Player of the Year award, raising his OPS 175 points, raising his batting average 74 points, being a clutch hitter like he was, playing three positions, only making one error last year. But what can you count on from a 38-year-old guy in the last year of a contract?
Yeah. Bruce, again, we have some great guests coming up very shortly. Ken Rosenthal, and boy, I got questions. I know you do as well. Larry Young coming up at 10 o'clock. I want to read this one tweet real quickly from Adam Schechter, talking a little bit of football real quickly here, and he's quoting Mike Ditka's longtime agent Steve Mandel, and I'll quote it now. Coach Ditka had a mild heart attack earlier this week. Doctors did insert a pacemaker. He's doing much better. He appreciates the outpouring of support and expects to be home soon. So that's good news. The coach is resting comfortably. I'm sure he'll be back on the golf course very shortly.
Well, we wish him the best. You know, what an icon. There's no such thing as mild and heart attack. We wish him the best. He's as tough as hell, and he's Chicago tough, and he'll get through it. You know, he'll be back. I'm sure the doctor, the first thing he's going to say is, stop smoking those blank cigars.
And he's a big baseball fan,
by the way.
People, you know.
He was a baseball player when he was a kid.
That's right.
And a really good one. So we wish the coach nothing but the best. When we come back, Ken Rosenthal at 9:30. Your calls all the time, 312-644-6767. Text David at 67011.
And we'll be back right after this. 9:27, welcome back into Inside the Clubhouse for Saturday, November 24th. I'm David Schuster. He's Bruce Levine. Right around the corner, we have the one and only Ken Rosenthal, and Ken always has great stuff. We have so many good questions, I hope, from my end and Bruce's end. to ask Ken, and we'll get some good information from him. But for right now, we're taking your calls at 312-644-6767. We have DePaul basketball coming up at 10:45, DePaul taking on Notre Dame. And then later this afternoon, we have football, of course, here on The Score. We have Illinois and Northwestern. We have the pregame show starting at 2 o'clock, Bruce.
Yes, sir. And we are expecting, as you said, Ken Rosenthal. But Hall of Fame voting is coming up. We're going to talk to you about that. This is the Modern Committee, 16 guys voting for people who have been off of the regular ballot for a while. The regular ballot is voted on and announced sometime in early January coming up here. But, you know, locally, you know, Harold Baines' name has come up. He's one of these 11 people here. Lee Smith, Lou Piniella, Will Clark, Joe Carter, Albert Bell, one of my favorites, Oral Hershiser, George Steinbrenner, who I would think, even with a chartered past, should be in the Hall of Fame
absolutely.
For his contributions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was in charge of a Yankee, you can call it a dynasty. They won enough titles, and he was the owner and a controversial person, of course. But yeah, when I think of George Steinbrenner, look at some of the other owners that have gotten into the different Hall of Fame, specifically baseball. Right. Yeah, I think of George Steinbrenner as a Hall of Famer.
So we'll talk to you about that in a segment later on in our 10 o'clock hour as well, because Harold Baines has some interesting numbers that we need to talk about. And knowing how the voters these days look at numbers compared to how they used to look at them, much different dynamic now, David. You know, sometimes now they hold it against guys for being around too long and not being the player that they were all that time, and that those numbers added up don't really show you quality of play at the end of their career.
And Bruce, the bottom of the hour here is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Coach Collins and Northwestern Basketball do return to the new Welsh Ryan Arena. It's coming up on Wednesday night when they host Georgia Tech in the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. We also want to talk a little bit about the White Sox. You mentioned earlier in the show, Avi Garcia. I just don't think Avi Garcia is going to be with the White Sox when the season starts.
You know what? Last year, believe it or not, they had very little interest in him from other teams. They talked to other people about him. After hitting 330 with 18 homers and 80 RBIs, he got very little play, which was surprising. But and home run is king in the game these days.
And Bruce, we now have a very, very special guest that's joining us here on Inside the Clubhouse, and I'll let you do the introductions.
Okay, where is Ken Rosenthal not at? Okay, I can tell you where he is at. He can be found at The Athletic. And you should subscribe to that because they have a really good deal on subscriptions right now that you can find online. He also works for Fox Sports, doing all the big games on Saturday and the postseason, and MLB Network. Kenny, did I leave anything out?
You're good, Bruce. Thanks, man.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. Ken_Rosenthal on Twitter. Other than that.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah. Other than that and his million followers, at least. Not too much out there. Kenny, let's start with Harper and Machado. I know people are sick of us talking about it every week without having destinations for these guys. What is the game plan for Boris right now as far as shopping Harper?
Bruce, the game plan for Boris is the same as it is every year with a marquee free agent, and that's to get the most money. And I know it sounds trite and kind of silly, but that has been his MO in free agency. And people will say, well, doesn't he want to go to a contender? Doesn't he want to go to this team? You can justify anything once the money is there. So let's just use the White Sox as an example. I don't believe this is going to happen, but if the White Sox outbid everyone by $20 million, $30 million, they're getting Bryce Harper. It's as simple as that. And at the press conference, what they will say is, well, the White Sox aren't that good now, but Bryce has studied their farm system, and he thinks in 3 or 4 years, or 2 or 3 years, they're going to be really something else. Go back to 2000 in the winter meetings in Dallas, yep. Texas, when the Rangers signed Alex Rodriguez. That was the playbook, folks.
Yeah. So, except he had Hicks bidding against himself three times.
Well, that's all it takes.
Yeah,
Jerry
that's
Reinsdorf
right.
is not Hicks, and we know that. And again, I'm not saying this is going to happen. In fact, I'd be shocked, utterly shocked, if it did happen. But that is generally the way these things go.
Hey, Kenny, I don't see Harper or Machado coming to the Cubs. However, I do think that they might dip their toe into free agency. Maybe they look at a reliever. Zach Britton is at least a possibility because they just don't know about the health of Brandon Morrow going forward. So what do you think the Cubs are going to do, whether it's free agency or even make a trade, because they do seem to have some surplus in either Ian Happ or Kyle Schwarber as trade bait. And on the other side of town, the White Sox, Avi Garcia, what do you think the chances of him being traded, you know, at these winter meetings?
Avi Garcia might be traded, but he is more likely a non-tender. I don't know that teams are going to give up much for him, given the injuries and all that happened with last year. The Cubs situation is far more interesting. And you've heard all offseason in Chicago, David, that the money is an issue, and it is an issue. There's not a question about that. And you mentioned Happ and Schwarber's trade bait. Sure, they are, but what are they going to bring exactly? How much in demand will they be? I would think you can get a pitcher for one of them, maybe a really good reliever, but I'm not even sure. And I don't know how exactly that would work. Schwarber could be the centerpiece of something bigger. So could Happ. But I don't see them being, wow, these are great chips, and the Cubs are going to kill it with these deals. So that leaves free agency. Because of the financial situation that they're in, they are not as free as they've been in the past, certainly last year when they did Darvish and Morrow and Chatwood. But I have a hard time believing that Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer are going to spend the entire winter just sitting still. That is not their history. It is not their style. They are creative. They have done some things in the past that have been very creative. So I would expect they're going to be active. I just can't predict or really even have a feel for what they might do.
Kenny, when you look at the Cubs, though, and all the major league teams, over the past year and a half, they've all gotten $68 million from the Disney streaming deal. They've just gotten another raise with the new deal with Fox of somewhere between $12 and $20 million each a year. Projected-wise, there should be no teams in Major League Baseball that can't bid on $30 million players, right?
Bruce, I'm not arguing with that one bit. And go beyond that even. Look at franchise values. Mm-hmm. They never seem to go down. And that is where owners really make their money, on the resale of a club. So there's certainly money in the sport. There's no doubt about it. And the Fox deal alone, I mean, that's a guarantee of something like $20 million per year, as you just mentioned. So the money is there. I think in the Cubs' case, it's almost more a luxury tax issue now.
Right.
But even that, you're not paying a crazy amount in luxury tax. We talk about it, and teams want to go under and reset their penalties to the minimum the way the Yankees and Dodgers have. I understand that. It's just good business. But if the Cubs go over, I don't know, $20 million, what they're paying ultimately, it's whatever it is. It's not that much in a grand scheme of things. And hey, in their particular case, forget all the national money and the streaming money. How about what they've done around Wrigley?
Yep.
So there's money there, but it's a question of whether the owners want to spend it or not. And the one thing I will caution fans and remind fans this time of year, and it kind of drives me nuts, everyone will get outraged when Harper and Machado get their deal. Oh my gosh, no player is worth that. Fine. But what about the owners? Now, we don't know what they're making. We don't have a sense of it or the same kind of feel because they don't go public with their books and all of that. But as you just said, we do know the streaming money. We do know the national TV money. We can have a sense of what the local money is going to be, television and media-wise, and it's going to be good once the Cubs and White Sox redo their deals. So no one's going broke. And if you want to complain about the players, in fairness, you should complain about the owners too.
Yeah, it's not as sexy, not as much fun.
It's not as much fun. And I, Bruce, in my opinion, this comes from the fact that we all played baseball as little kids. We all think we should have been major leaguers, and we're outraged by the fact that somebody who got lucky enough to get to the big leagues can get $350 million. Well, right, I get that. But owners who have a little bit different path than most of us, they're doing fine.
We're talking to Ken Rosenthal, and you can follow him on Twitter at Ken_Rosenthal, and I suggest you do because I follow him on Twitter, and I learn something every single day that I follow him on Twitter. Kenny, going into next season, obviously the Red Sox once again will be the team to beat, But I want to talk about that in general, because the Astros were the team to beat going into this past season. I thought for sure they were going to repeat, but they didn't get out of the National League. Matter of fact, I think every team that wins the year before, I always pick them to win the following season, going back to the Cubs in 16, the White Sox in 05 here locally. But teams just don't repeat in baseball. Why is that?
It's a great question, David. And we can use two examples. Let's use the 2016 Cubs for starters. We all thought, and I remember writing the night they won, that this is only the start. This is it. These guys are all going to get better, and it's going to be great for the Cubs for a long time. Well, things don't always progress, especially with young players, in a linear fashion. It's not a straight upward slope. And we've seen with the Cubs, guys go up and down. Some of the younger players. Normal. Chris Bryant has an injury-plagued year. Normal. These things happen. And that's just the way baseball is. The Red Sox, 2018, the team that just won. There's no reason to believe they won't be really good again next season. They've already re-signed Steve Pierce. They may get Eovaldi back. They may not, but they'll do something else. They've got the whole core back. They've got a team that won 108 games and then really had a great postseason as well. But this is a team that has yet to deal with a ton of adversity. And when I say that, I mean a sustained stretch of losing. They won 108 games, right? That's going to happen. It's going to happen this year, probably. And Alex Cora at that point is going to be dealing with a different dynamic. Guys will get hurt. Things will change for them. And the hunger is not the same. And it's understandable. Of course players want to win. They want to win every game they go out there. They want to win every season. But there is no question a different motivation when you haven't done it than when you have. And all of this plays into it.
Ken Rosenthal joining us for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. He's David Schuster. I'm Bruce Levine. We're here for you every week. My partner, usually, Matt Spiegel, will be back next week. Every week from 9 to 11 today, shortened version till 10:45, DePaul basketball fouls. And Kenny, I'm ready to file an age discrimination case against Major League Baseball for managers of teams like Joe Maddon and Bruce Bochy and Mike Socha, because they are now going to be considered ancient, and they are considered out of touch to the game and no longer hireable. What is the directive, do you believe, from Major League Baseball about hiring when suggestions are put out there? And how do you see this trend going, knowing Joe's going into his last year under contract, Bochy last year under contract, the $6 million manager, a thing now of the past in Major League Baseball?
Bruce, you just hit it with the last thing you said, the money. And I don't know that it's age, although that's part of it, but it's really the fact that teams do not necessarily like managers making $6 million a year, and there's more to it as well. The rise of analytics, which, of course, has been a huge trend in the game, adopted by every team at this point. Well, teams like to work, what do they say, collaboratively with their managers, which means they like to have an influence on their managers. And when you have a younger manager who hasn't done it before, it's easier to have that kind of influence. And it's easier to perhaps get the manager to agree and buy into this whole collaborative effort. It's not the way Joe Maddon came up managing, although he's adapted to it quite well. It's certainly not the way Bruce Bochy came up managing, Mike Socha, all of these different older managers. So it's not age, because these guys are certainly smart enough to do it. They're qualified to do it. But it's this idea that the front offices want greater control over the finances of a manager. They want greater control over the decision-making of a manager. And these younger managers are more pliable. Now, Charlie Montoyo just got hired by the Blue Jays. He is not necessarily a young guy, and he's certainly not an experienced manager, but he is someone who is, I believe, 53. Now, he's not going to get big money, but he comes, as does Brian Snitker, from a long history of managing in the minors. And to me, that is the proving ground. Managing the minors, coaching the majors, this was traditionally the path, and it's the path the teams have gotten away from, and that is the thing, honestly, that bothers me the most. Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of quality people out there who just never get the chance. And I understand an Alex Cora is a really good choice, and Aaron Boone is a really good choice. These are bright guys who yes, you want managing, but there shouldn't be an exclusion of guys like Montoyo and Snitker either.
Right. And when you have guys like Dave Roberts, who we don't even know if he's a great manager now. We know he got his team to the to win a pennant 2 years in a row, but when he's got an analytics guy sitting next to him, handing him different things from the front office during the game, when he's handed a lineup before the game and asked to adhere to most of it, at this point, they become less than middle managers. How do you retain a clubhouse presence when people know that you're not really the one that's totally in charge of what's going on down there?
That's a fair question. And it's a delicate balance. Now, Roberts, if you had him on the air right now, would tell you it's not what we perceive it to be. Mm-hmm. That he does make the decisions, he does use the information, but it's not as if Andrew Friedman has his hands on the lineup card and is dictating what's going on. Regardless, they certainly adhere to an analytical approach. And whether it's because of the front office wanting that or whether it's because of Dave Roberts accepting it, that's the way it's been. Now, Alex Cora certainly put his stamp on the Red Sox. There's no doubt about that. He had a very aggressive way of managing. He had a very direct idea of what he wanted to do. And yes, analytics played a big part in it. He brought some ideas from Houston and incorporated them with the Red Sox. I'll go back a year before that. A.J. Hinch in the postseason. That was not a front office-driven strategy that he employed. He was basically going, for lack of a better phrase, on gut with some of the relief choices he made because he knew some of his relievers could not handle the load. So he chose a Charlie Morton or a Lance McCullers in certain situations. That is how you get respect. And I don't know that Dave Roberts doesn't have the respect of his clubhouse. In fact, I think that's a misstatement. He does have the respect. But it's a tough balance to strike. And the Dodgers are kind of a case study in this. A lot of people to this day, we're weeks away from the World Series. I talked to a major league coach last week, and he said, I cannot believe Cody Bellinger did not start in the first two games against the left-hander. Well, I'm still surprised myself, but that's the way the Dodgers play it.
Yep. Kenny, you're the best. We'll keep reading you every day in The Athletic, which is on sale and a great buy for everybody out there. MLB Network, Fox, certainly follow you on Twitter, Ken_Rosenthal, and we'll see you at the winter meetings. It should be a lot of fun, and we'll be following Boris and Harper around just like everybody else.
Sounds good, Bruce. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Kenny.
Kenny Rosenthal, such a great reporter. So much information, a lot of insight.
You know what I love about Ken Rosenthal and actually all the national writers? There's a camaraderie, you know, between them. There's a really competitive, and we know all the names that, you know, and he's probably the leader of the pack. But they're so competitive, and yet there's a camaraderie, which, you know, maybe that's the way it's supposed
to be.
Well,
it's competition.
It's competition, but they seemingly get along.
I mean, you know, I've been involved with those guys. I saw them as young guys growing up, too. Over the past, 40 years that I've been covering. And, you know, him and Heyman and Buster Olney and, you know, we're all pups out of the reporting era from Peter Gammons. Peter Gammons, you know, and going back to Jerome Holtzman here in Chicago and Dick Young in New York, information guys. What's better than information guys? If you have information and it's real and it's legitimate and it's on the money, that's still king in all of sports.
It's something that I'll always gravitate towards.
And you got to be right a lot of the time. And now if you're wrong, you have to sit there on Twitter and say, I was wrong. Here's exactly what happened. I mean, it's just a lot more fun now, but it's more challenging with social media.
Bruce, we got another really good guest coming up at 10 o'clock, Larry Young, who is supervisor of umpires. We got some good questions of him, and we'll get some good information as well. And we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls. Our number is always 312-644-6767. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse. 9:52, welcome back into Inside the Clubhouse for Saturday, November 24th. I'm David Schuster, he's Bruce Levine. We have Larry Young, supervisor of umpires, that's coming up after 10 o'clock. And Bruce, right now, let's go back out to the phone lines, 312-644-6767. Pick it up with a longtime caller to Inside the Clubhouse. Ron, checking in from the South Side. Go ahead, Ron, you're on Inside the Clubhouse.
Well, good morning, guys. Just wanted to agree with Ken Rosenthal. You know, it's interesting when you think about Avisaíl Garcia. We never knew really what his potential was, and then the 1 year when he, you know, put up some decent numbers. But Bruce, you pointed it out. It's really about home runs, and his average was high, but the 18. But more important than that was the RBIs. So in addition to them, you know, having the prospects, outfield prospects, it's just time for him to move along, you know, move on. And like I said, just over the years, just was interested, just trying to watch this guy and hoping that he would develop into a very good ball player. And he really didn't. So if the White Sox weren't able to trade him last year, they definitely won't be able to trade him now. So thank you, guys.
Ron, did you ever get a sense that he was an important cog, a leader on the team? I mean, did you ever feel him as a White Sox?
Absolutely not, Bruce. Just never felt that about him. Never did. So, I don't know about his work ethic and the injuries. So, never really embraced him. It's really the White Sox.
Thanks, Ron. Holidays, nice holiday season. This is now incorporated between Thanksgiving and New Year's as the holiday season, right?
I'm already hearing Christmas music.
I'm sure you were out on Black Friday yesterday shopping your butt off.
No. I went to the movies, of course, and I'll
ask you for some. Okay. You know, you're my guy when it comes to movies. I'm usually right there with you in your taste.
You know, it's talking about the White Sox and Avi Garcia, and it's interesting. Last year, obviously, he didn't have this past season. He had a lot of injuries, missed a lot of games. He hit more home runs this past season, 19.
Percentage-wise, yeah.
Yeah, he had 19 in a much lesser amount of games than he did the season before. Maybe, just maybe, some team will take a look at him and say, you know, especially a team that's got some guys who are getting on base in the top couple of spots in the order, and maybe he can be a run producer. He really wasn't overall for the White Sox, yeah. And I think he is expendable because the White Sox strength is going to be in their farm system in the outfield position. Eloy Jimenez will come up, Luis Robert, you know, a year or two or whatever down the road, and they got so many other guys. So he is expendable. I'm just wondering, can't they at least get a fringe player for him?
I hate to say
it,
but I think he's a middle-of-the-order hitter on a second-division team.
Okay, that's fair.
And the White Sox are still that. They're a second-division team, but they don't want to stay there.
No.
This year it's incumbent upon the White Sox to learn and to help their players learn how to win baseball games again. Because you got guys like Jose Abreu that's played 5 years, and this will be the sixth year of his career on a team that didn't have an over 500 winning record. I mean, that is, when people talk about sports, and you see it when you cover basketball as great as you do, when you cover hockey and football like you do, there's something about learning how to win. Mm-hmm. You can't just lose. The talent will help you. They have great young talent coming along. But at some point, they're going to be bringing in a veteran pitcher this offseason. They're going to bring in some other veterans to lead the way and say, you know what? This is how we go about it. This is how you must, your work ethic must be. And it's all about winning the game at the end. They're going to have a better bullpen to do it. But the talent is there, and this is a season they have to step on the gas.
Absolutely. This is the season upcoming that the White Sox have to turn the corner and start moving upward, because you can only talk about potential for so long. You got to start winning, and I think that's what they have
to
do.
We're going to talk more about Cubs trades, free agency, White Sox trades, free agency, the Hall of Fame coming up with some names that have Chicago interest to it. Your calls at 312-644-6767. Text David at 67011. Larry Young, a great umpire for 32 years, now umpire supervisor, will talk to us at the top of the hour here about some changes possibly in baseball, maybe some new rules coming our way.
All right, and we'll hear from Larry right after this. You're listening to Inside the Clubhouse.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.